Okay, first of all, welcome back, whoever came back, and the ones that were here, I'm sure, enjoyed Yom Tov in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, the Parshios, Tazria and Mitzora, deal mainly with Tumas Tzoras, but it also deals with other Tumos that are caused by either by men or by women, by things that come from the body, issues that issue from the body. I want to first explain to you in a general way what Tuma and Tahara is, and explain why giving birth is something that would create Tuma. The concept of Tuma and Tahara is the following. Wherever there was Kedusha, Kedusha is that which is real in this world. Kedusha is something that has a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kedoshim tiyu ki kadosh ani. All Kedusha emanates from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a emanation, an extension of His Kedusha. And that's what's real. That's what's substantive in this world. Where the Rabbanu Shel Olam isn't kibiyachol is in those things that are negative, which are not really existent. Ra, bad, sheker, is all just perceived, but it's not real. Sheker means that it's false, can't be real. And that's why sheker ein lo raglayim. The word sheker, all the letters stand either on one foot, the kuf and the resh, or come to a point, the shin is supposed to come to a point, also stands on one foot. It has no real existence to itself. And that's why the letters of Sheker are all bunched together in the end of the Aleph Beis and not in order. Whereas MS, the letters of MS all stand on either a base or on two legs. The Aleph has two legs, the Mem has a base, the Tav has two legs, and they span the entire Aleph Beis. Aleph, Mem, Tav, beginning, middle, end. It's what is real, what is substantive. And therefore, all Kedusha is associated with life, with existence. And Tuma is for the most part associated with death. The most serious Tuma, in certain ways at least, is a dead body. And people who come in contact with dead bodies. And all other Tumas also have a connection somehow to the absence of life. Okay, by a woman, the time that she's a nidah is a time that she can't produce life, where she's incapable of getting pregnant. So it's the absence of life. By a man, the issues from his body that could have caused life, could have brought a new life, have gone now to waste and haven't brought any life, so it's associated with a certain kind of death. So all tumas are associated somehow with death, which is the absence of kedusha, which is the absence of existence. Therefore, the basic idea of Tuma is wherever there was Kedusha and the Kedusha left, the vacuum that is left is either that vacuum itself is Tuma, or according to others, a vacuum can't remain in the natural world. There's always something that fills the vacuum. Okay, it's one of the laws of science. There are no natural vacuums in the world, except vacuum cleaners, but there are no natural vacuums in this world. Something always fills a vacuum. You could only artificially create a vacuum. And therefore, when there is this vacuum of non-existence, negative things fill it up. That's Tuma. But according to many, the idea of Tuma, the way the Kuzri seems to say, Tuma is the absence of Kedusha. It's the vacuum itself that appears to be non-existent. That's Tuma. Therefore, wherever there was a greater Kedusha, there's a greater Tuma. A Jew who dies is more Tameh than a non-Jew who dies, because a Jewish neshama is more Kodesh than a non-Jewish neshama. So he creates more of a vacuum when his neshama leaves, more tumah. A non-Jew causes more tumah than a dead animal, because the life of an animal is on a lesser level than a non-Jew's life. So there's less of a vacuum, less tumah. That's the rule. With that, you can understand a little bit why when a woman gives birth, there's tumah and there's also extra tahara. Okay, she becomes tameh for a certain amount of time by a boy. When she gives birth to a boy, she becomes tameh for 7 days, and then she becomes tahar for 33 days. Even if she sees blood, she's tahar for 33 days. This is all from the Torah. Rabbinically, all of this is not relevant. Okay, but from the Torah. And by a girl, she's tameh for 14 days, but she's tahar for 66 days. Double. Why? And why? But what's an idea behind it? One of the ideas could be the following. When a woman is pregnant, and again, tameh ha-mitzvah, just because inevitably you're going to ask me a question on this, so I'm going to avoid the question. Tameh ha-mitzvah do not explain the reasons for all of the halachas of the mitzvah, because they're not a reason. They're just a tam, a taste. So they have a general idea, just like a taste of food does not describe every aspect about the food. It's just a taste. There's a taste in this halacha. It's not the reason for the halacha. Therefore, it doesn't apply to every detail. When a woman's pregnant, she has basically two neshamas in her. Her own neshama and the neshama of the child. That doesn't mean if she's pregnant with twins or triplets, she has four neshamas or whatever, even though she does, but she has an extra added amount of neshama within her for the child. When she gives birth, that extra neshama leaves, so it causes tumah. That vacuum that is caused within her now, that she no longer has that extra life force in her, causes tumah. On the other hand, though, she brought another life into the world. So she brought extra kedusha into the world, so it causes tahara, too. Extra tahara. A girl has the potential of bringing other life into the world herself, in her own body. So therefore, the kedusha of a girl's neshama is greater, potentially, than the kedusha of a boy's neshama, because the boy in his own body can't bring another life into this world. He can cause another life to come into the world, but it's not part of his body. So a girl's body, aside from the neshama that she has the potential of bringing more neshamas into the world. So therefore, the tumah is greater because the vacuum is greater. And the mela, the tahara, is greater too. By a boy, the tumah is less, but the tahara is also less. That could be a tam. Now, it doesn't apply. What if the baby's born, stillborn? Chmona litzlan. Right? Still, the same halacha applies. But according to what I'm saying, it shouldn't be. Right? Like I said, if she has twins or triplets, it should be as many times, as many neshamas, that's how much she should be tummy. That doesn't apply either. Again, it's a general taste in the mitzvah. It's not the reason for it, so it doesn't explain all the details, but it's an idea behind the mitzvah. Okay, now, with that, we can understand tumas tzaras. Tzaras is basically for Lashon Hara. Okay, there are other things that cause tzaras, but basically it's for Lashon Hara, motzi shemra, and what's the idea? Tzaras is almost as if the person is a living dead person. His skin turns white, the color of mamish of a dead skin, like a dead person. And he basically functions as if he's dead. He has to remain separate from people. Okay, bodad yeshev. And he goes through a period of mourning, basically for himself. Lets his hair grow, right? He, basically is like a mourner. And he's mourning for himself. Now, why is tzaras basically is a symbol of a person who's alive, but for all practical purposes is spiritually dead. And it is a result of Lashon Hara. Why? Because the Gemara says that Adam la'amal yulad, a person basically was created la'amal, to toil in this world. Toil means taking potential and actualizing it. That is the concept of amal, putting in effort to actualize potential. So the Maral explains the idea of amal. That's a person was created to realize his potential in this world. He's given potential, he was put in this world to realize it. The Gemara says, I don't know if he was put in to be amal in malacha, to do work. That's also actualizing physical potential. When it says, ki ikaf olav pihu, pasuk that continues this pasuk, adam la'amal yulad, it means that he was put in this world to speak. Mainly to actualize his verbal potential. And I still don't know if it's stam speech, sicha, or Torah. When it says, v'hagisa bo'yoma v'layla, I know that a person was put in this world to actualize his Torah potential. Torah, learning Torah. That's the main purpose of a person in this world, to actualize the potential of Torah that he has. Now the Chafetz Chaim explains this Gemara, because without psukim, I would maybe think that a person was put in this world to work, physically, and achieve his potential that way. And I need a pasuk to tell me that he was put in this world not just to talk. That the purpose of existence is not just to converse and talk. I need a pasuk to tell me it's Torah. So Chofetz Chaim says, what? When the world is the Havamim, I need a pasuk to tell me a person wasn't put in this world just to talk? So Chofetz Chaim explains it in the following way. Physical work in this world, malacha, is very important. The greatest malacha that people can do is the malachas you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, which were the ones that went into building the Mishkan. In doing malacha, you can build a Mishkan and bring God's presence into this world. Meaning that by perfecting the physical world, you can make it the kind of place that's fit for God's presence. The Mishkan was a microcosm. It was like a little model of the universe. That means if you put the right work into the universe, you can create the means, the environment for God's presence to come into this world. That's a pretty hefty thing. That's amal malacha. Very important. Person was put in this world to perfect the world. God created an imperfect world on purpose. In fact, Turnus Rufus HaRasha once asked Rabbi Akiva, what's better, what God makes or what human beings make? He expected Rabbi Akiva to say, what God makes is superior to what people make. And then he would have attacked him and said, then we Goyim, who are uncircumcised, are better than you Jews who are circumcised, because we're the way God made us. So Rabbi Akiva said, of course what people make is better than what God makes. So Turnus Rufus had all the wind taken out of his sails, so he said, how could that be? He said, very simple. He said, you're going to go home and eat lunch. God made wheat. Your wife made bread and cake. Which is better? Obviously, the bread and cake is much better than the wheat. What does that mean? That God created an imperfect world on purpose, because he wanted human beings to perfect the world. That is the purpose of the creation. God created the world in its raw state, that we should be the ones to perfect it. Some learn that's what it means. Asher bara Elokim la'asos. God created the world unfinished, undeveloped, la'asos, that man should continue it on and finish it off. And in doing so, he creates a world where now it's fit for God's presence. He brings the world from its potential to its actualizes that potential and makes it an environment where God's presence can come into the world. It's a very important thing. So I might think that that was the purpose of creation. And by Goyim, that is their major idea. That's why they can't rest. Yom v'layla lo yishbosu. Their major purpose is to perfect the physical world, and therefore there's never a time that they have vacation from that. They're always working malacha to perfect the world, ideally. But that's not the ideal. That's not the ultimate. That is one aspect of actualizing potential on the physical level. But there's a higher level, and that is through speech. So speech has many aspects to it. One is sicha. Sicha means a lot of things. Sicha can mean tefillah. Sicha can mean communication. People communicate with each other. In order to be able to bring the world to its completion, it's not enough just to have a physical environment. The physical environment is that there could be a society. People can work together, learn from each other, influence each other, help each other, chesed, whatever. That comes through sicha, through communication. When people can't communicate, then they can't, there's no functioning society. That's what happened by Migdal Bavel. People can daven. They can communicate with God. They can communicate with each other. Communication is also part of the development of the potential of the world through communication. And that's even more important than the physical. The physical just sets the stage for society. And communication is what creates society. So that's a higher level. But there's the higher level than that. And that is the actual perfection, intrinsic perfection itself. That's Torah. When a person learns Torah, a person actually creates heaven and earth. That is the continuation of creation, Torah learning. Torah learning, person who learns Torah, it says, Ki ilu bona paltrin shalmala, paltrin shalmata. It's like he built the palaces in the heavens. A person becomes a partner in creation. So it's not just setting the stage for God's presence, it is actually building God's presence in the world. Torah is God's will, and bringing Torah into the world is bringing God into the world. Where did God reside? Where the Torah was. Where the Luchos were. That is God's presence in the world is Torah. When did God's presence come into the world? When he gave us the Torah. So God's essence, kibiyachol, is expressed through his will, which is expressed through the Torah. So that's the ultimate. Therefore, the ultimate of what a person is supposed to do in this world is with his mouth. Communication, creating a society where people can work together and bring the world to its fruition, and Torah learning, which is the ultimate. And that's why Talmud Torah keneged kulam. All the chasodim, all the things that people can do to create a functioning society is only a means to reach an end. But the end is what you can accomplish with Torah. So Talmud Torah keneged kulam. There are things that destroy society, that destroy the physical world. Avodah Zarah is one of them. It takes God's presence out of the world completely and makes it a totally physical world with physical powers that run the world. That's Avodah Zarah. Shvichas Damim is killing human beings, is destroying the entire ability to create a functioning society. If you don't have people, you don't have a functioning society. So that's murder. And Gili Arayis is taking the world, and when you build society through propagating the world, doing it in a way that doesn't bring God's presence to the world, but brings Tumah to the world. That's why those three things are the destruction of the physical world, the destruction of society. But there's something, just like all the chasodim is the building of society, and Talmud Torah keneged kulam, Gili Arayis, Shvichas Damim, Avodah Zarah is the destruction of society, and what's keneged kulam? Lashon Hara. The Lashon Hara keneged kulam. Because Lashon Hara basically is not just the means to destroy, it is the destruction of God's presence in the world. Where's God's presence in the world? Through speech. Through a person using his speech to build society, to bring God's presence in the world. And if you take your speech and you use it for the antithesis, to cause machlokas, to cause strife between people. And Lashon Hara is the opposite of Torah. Torah is the manifestation of God's will and God's presence, and Lashon Hara is the antithesis of that. So Lashon Hara keneged kulam, just like Talmud Torah keneged kulam on the other side. So a person was born into this world. That's why the parsha starts with birth. And he came after all the animals. Last week's Sedra ended with the laws of kashrus, the laws of animals. All animals were created, all life was created to serve man, because man is the one that perfects the world. So the entire creation, the entire potential was created that man should now bring it to its fruition and develop it and perfect it and actualize the potential of everything in the world. So the Torah of a human being was said after the Torah of animals. Woman gives birth, right, brings a new life into this world. Now that's if the person will fulfill his purpose in this world. But if he doesn't fulfill his purpose, and he speaks Lashon Hara, so he can either learn Torah, say Sicha, do Malacha, and perfect the world, or he can do the antithesis of all of that, which is Lashon Hara. And then he basically is killing himself. He is alive according to the functions of scientific life, but basically his life is meaningless. And it has no connection to Kedusha. So therefore, he's a living dead person. Basically, he's dead. So what is the physical manifestation of that death? Tzaras. That's a Metzora. So the Torah starts with the laws of animals, the preparation of the world for the sake of man. Then man comes into the world, he has a choice. He can either be the completer, the perfecter of the world, or he can destroy everything and clutch himself. That's the next parasha of Tzaras, of Lashon Hara. That's the dynamics of the end of last week's Sedra, the beginning of this week's Sedra, and the continuation of the Sedra. That's the concept of Lashon Hara, of Mitzaras, of basically a person taking his potential and destroying it. That's why when a person's born, it says that he learns all the Torah. And it doesn't only mean a man, nor even a woman, it means even Goyim. Everybody learns the Torah that applies to them. And their job in this world is to actualize that Torah. And mainly through what they say, and saying designates what you do. So it's all part of your what you speak. And it says right before a person's born, a malach, the malach who taught you all that Torah, hits you on the lip, and you forget it all. Says the Maral, what in the world does your lip have to do with remembering? If the malach wants you to forget, he should hit you on the head, not on the lip. The idea is he doesn't make you forget all the Torah. He just makes it not accessible. It now remains potential. And you have to access it and realize it. It's otherwise ridiculous. If you learn all the Torah and you forget it, what's the purpose of it all? But the idea is that it's there. It's contained within your neshama, except it remains on a potential level. Torah is not something that you could get in this world with the gray matter in your brain. Torah is a spiritual thing. It can't be created by physical kelim. So you need to learn it with a malach who deposits it in your hard drive. But then you can access it from that point on. But the malach makes it that it has to be accessed by your effort. Adam la'amal yulad, you have to put in the effort to access it. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be accessed automatically. So that is the concept of potential to actual, mostly to do with verbal, because everything starts with thought, speech, designation, and Torah is the ultimate of building this world, and a person who uses his speech for the antithesis of building the world, both by causing strife and destroying society, and Mamela not using it for Torah, but using it for the antithesis. Torah is the ultimate Tov, ain't Tov ela Torah. And here you're using it for Lashon Hara. which is the antithesis, the absence of existence, so that person basically is a dead person. And that's why Tzaras is the, in the time when the Ribbono Shel Olam dealt with us in an open way, as soon as a person spoke Lashon Hara, or as soon as it became part of him, it became obvious that he basically was dead. And it appeared on his skin as if he's a dead person. He had a function then as a living dead person. That's Tzaras. Okay, any questions on this? We'll go to something else in the parasha. One last thing. It says that Nige Batim, second parasha, Metzora, comes partially for Tzaras Ayin. Because your person is stingy. He's stingy. Okay? And therefore, one of the halachas is that before the Kohen comes, we make him take all of his kalim out of his house and put it out on the lawn. Because if the Kohen will come and declare the house tameh, then the kalim are going to become tameh. And we don't want that to happen. So, and if he declares the house tameh, it doesn't become tameh retroactively. It becomes tameh from that point on. So if all the kalim are out of the house, the kalim will not become tameh. So, the Gemara says, this is partially a kapara for the sin that precipitated the nega in the house. Why does a person get a nega in his house? Because he's stingy. He's selfish. And therefore, when people would come to ask to borrow things, he was very stingy with things, and he would always say, I don't have that. To avoid the, can I borrow your lawnmower? I don't have a lawnmower. Can I borrow your whatever, right? And he always said, I don't have it. But he has it. So Torah said he's going to get a nega in his house, which is going to remind him that something's wrong and he should do tshuva. Okay? And part of the kapara is going to be that he's going to have to take all his kalim out of the house. So what it's going to be, it's like a yard sale. His neighbor's going to come and say, hey, I thought you said you didn't have a lawnmower. There it is. I thought you said you didn't have this or that or the other thing. And there it is all out in the lawn. So the embarrassment that he's going to have is going to be part of his kapara. Okay, that's one source in Chazal. There's another source in Chazal that on the surface seems to be totally contradictory. And that is the following. That the reason that we make him take the kalim out of the house is because there are certain kalim that you can't be matayer. Most kalim, metal, wood, you could put into a mikveh, if it's tamei, and make it tar. But klicheres, earthenware things, you can't be matayer in a mikveh. The only way of making them tar is breaking them. And refashioning them or whatever in a kiln. So they have to be broken. So basically, that's the end of the kalim. Now, earthenware kalim are very, very cheap kalim. Right? They're not like silver, gold, whatever, or even wood. They're the cheapest kalim are made out of earthenware. Okay. The Torah wanted to teach us or wanted to show us how much God values Jewish money. HaTorah chosal mamonim sheYisrael. God values Jewish money. Money's important. And God doesn't want us to even waste an earthenware keli, that it should become tameh, and there's nothing you can do with it. You have to break it. So therefore, God said, take all your kalim out of the house, for fear that the Kohen will declare the house tameh, and you'll lose these earthenware kalim. The other kalim you can fix. Take them to a mikveh. But the earthenware kalim you have to break, I don't want you to lose your money, even if it means only a few pennies. Now, if you think about it, those two lessons are contradictory. Because if somebody's stingy, I would say it's because he puts too much importance in money. And I would want to teach him a lesson that money's not so important. Right? At the same time that we're trying to cure this guy of being stingy, we're giving him the lesson that God considers money really important. Every penny counts. So, which is it? I would think that if you want to cure somebody of stinginess, you want to give them a lesson that money's not so important, and we're giving a guy a lesson that money's important to the extreme. How's that going to cure him of his stinginess? So I think that there's no question at all, and the explanation is the following. The Torah says you should love the Rabbanu Shem more than what's the most beloved thing to you. B'chol levavcha, u'v'chol, all your heart, chol nafshecha, even your life. God, love of God should be more important than your life. And if somebody comes and threatens you with death, or to give up your avas Hashem by being over avodah zarah, give up your life for your love of God. And then it says, b'chol moldecha, you have to give up your money too. So Chazal say, if I already know you have to give your life for God, sure, you have to give your money. So the Gemara says, no, there's people whose money is more important than their life. So for those people, the Torah says, not only have to give up your life, you have to give up your money too. So normally we think, those are like crazy people, right? What in the world, what kind of meshugana, right, values his money more than his life? And there are people like that, but they're meshugana. They're people who work themselves to an early death to make money, right? That means that their money is more important than their life. They neglect their family, they neglect their health, right, just to make more and more money. So obviously they're more important to them money than life. But they're crazy people. So why in the world would the Torah have to go out of its way to let me know that crazy people have to love God more than their money, where normal people have to love God more than their life? The Torah went out of its way to say a special pasuk for crazy people? The answer to that question, which just raises another question, is another Gemara. The Gemara says, Tzadikim chavivim aleihem mamonim yosem igufan. You know who values their money more than their life? Tzadikim. And we learn it from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu put his life in danger to go get some earthenware kalim that he forgot. That means that his money was more precious than his life. So we're not talking about crazy people anymore. Who are the people who value their money more than their life? Tzadikim. Which just raises another question. Why? It doesn't make any sense. Right? You would think tzadikim don't value their money at all. What's money? And they value it more than their life. The idea being that a tzaddik understands that his body, it doesn't say life, it says tzaddikim chavivim aleihem mamonim yosar migufan, more than their bodies. A tzaddik understands that everything he has in this world, a body, material possessions, were given to him to serve God and fulfill his purpose in this world. This world is like a play. Everybody has a part. So when you're created, God gave you a neshama that fits your part. You have a part in the play, you have an act, scene to show up into the world, right? Some point in history. You have a place on the stage where you do your part. Not everybody's on the same place on the stage. You have a place where you're supposed to be. You have a costume. It's called your body. And you have props. That's called your material possessions. And all of that is needed to serve, to fulfill your part in this world. Okay. So everything a tzaddik understands, its purpose was given to him, whether it's his body, his material possessions, his neshama, to fulfill his part in this world. Okay. Now, therefore, they're all very precious, because my part in the world is a very precious thing. That's my tachlis. It's my tafkid. And therefore, my money is precious to me, my material possessions, because they help me fulfill my tafkid. And my body is precious to me. What, however, is more precious to a person? What he puts more effort into or less effort into? Right? So we have a rule that preciousness, what's precious to a person, is what he puts effort in. The more effort you put into something, the more precious it is to you. The less effort you put in, the less precious. A baby is much more precious to the mother, puts a lot more effort into that baby starting from 9 months of pregnancy than the father. And over the years, the father can gain preciousness to that child too, but the mother obviously put a lot more effort into that child than the father did. So the child is much more precious to its mother. And everything in life is like that. The more effort you put in, the more precious the thing is. How much effort do you have to put into your body to use it for Avodas Hashem? Let's see. First effort would be in securing your body, in getting it. Do you have to put any effort to get your body? No, it's a birthday present. First birthday, God gave you a body, free, no effort, you're born with it. Okay. You have to put effort into maintaining your body? Yeah. You have to eat, you have to keep it healthy, whatever. Do you have to put effort into using your body? Yeah. So out of three possible efforts, only two of them apply to the body. How about material possessions? So if people would steal, it may be easy to acquire material possessions. But tzaddikim don't steal. That's what the Gemara says. Since tzaddikim don't steal, so they have to earn every penny honestly, means they have to put a lot of effort into securing their material possessions. Then they have to put effort into maintaining it. And then they have to put effort into using it. Three out of three. So which one's more precious? They both are means to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. Which one entails more effort? The money. So which one's more precious? The money's more precious than the body. That's how a tzaddik looks at his material possessions. They are kelim for avodas Hashem. They are means, things to be used, just like your body is a keli for avodas Hashem. Memela, a person who really understands the value of money, it's not just to make me happy. It's not just to enjoy. It's much greater than that. It's something that I can use to fulfill my tafkid, my tachlis, to use it for the other people's sake also. Other people should benefit from me. It's a much grander thing than just having money to enjoy. And therefore, a person who looks at his money as merely something that gives him pleasure is a tsar ayin. He has narrow vision. That's what tsarus ayin means. It doesn't mean he's selfish. It means he has narrow vision. His perspective on his material possessions is very, very narrow. He doesn't really appreciate how important money is. It's not because he overvalues money. He overappreciates it. It's because he underappreciates it. If he would really appreciate what money is all about, he wouldn't be selfish. He's only selfish because he has a very narrow vision of what money is all about. That's Saras Ayin. The male of the two lessons aren't contradictory. God says, I'm telling you, your money is very important. I don't want you to waste one penny. Because money is a kli for Avodas Hashem, you can fulfill your tafkid with that money. Not just get pleasure. How much pleasure can you get from an earthenware thing? Buy another one. Right? In the two shekel store, get another one. In one shekel store. So if your whole idea of money is what it can benefit you, what pleasure you can get from it, what's it worth? But if the idea is it's a kli for Avodas Hashem, then it's eternal. It's without limitation. What you can do with any kli. Anything. It's not just what its value is to your pleasure. It's what you can use it. And therefore it's eternally and without limit, limitlessly important. So we want to teach you how important money is in God's eyes, not just because it's something that gives you pleasure. It's much greater than that. If that's the case, then you'll learn not to be stingy. Because you'll appreciate the full value of what money is, what it can be used for, you won't be a stingy person. You're stingy not because you overvalue your money. It's because you don't appreciate the value, the real value of what money is. That's the lesson. Therefore, the two lessons aren't contradictory. Two lessons go pretty much together. One more point, and then most of you should go to sleep. From what I hear, most of you came in now, haven't slept, and who knows what. I'm amazed that you're up now, but you're probably so overtired that it's hard to sleep even from this. So if I can't put you to sleep, you really need to go to sleep. The one more point. it says that if a person has tsaras and it is limited to one place in his body, then he's tameh. But if it spreads over his entire body, then he's tahor. So the Chafetz Chaim, I think, says the idea is, the whole idea of tzaras is to awaken you that something's wrong, you better do tshuva. So if you have a small thing of tzaras, right, it's going to arouse you to think, and you need time to think. So you're tameh, and the time of your tuma will give you time to contemplate the things you need to do tshuva to become tahor. But if the tzaras covers your entire body, you don't need any time to think. It's going to hit you right between the eyes, so you don't have to be tameh. The tzaras itself that covers your whole body is going to accomplish that without even any time of tuma or reflection. It's just, it's so obvious that you don't need to become tameh. That's one idea. But the Rishonim say a different idea, which is also has a tremendous mussar value to it. And that's the following. If something is localized in one place, then it usually goes deep. And then it's much more significant and much more dangerous. But if it spreads over your whole body, it probably is just shallow. It doesn't go down deep, because it spreads out. So when something spreads out, it's very shallow. Shallow tzaras doesn't cause tumah. But deep tzaras causes tumah, which is a lesson in everything else. Things that are very shallow don't have too much of an effect. But things, they may not be as big, but if they're more intense, even if they're smaller, they're much more effective than larger things that are only shallow level. Okay, so that's a concept why tzaras that covers the whole body is tahor, whether if it only covers a portion of the body, then it's tameh.